Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What will it take to put the United States back on solid financial footing? Separate and apart from the problems individual Americans have with money in this troubled economy, our federal government has an alarming amount of foreign debt to repay, and its obligations to the recipients of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are still on the rise. So how did we get here, and what will it take to claw our way back to solvency? David M. Walker is the former Comptroller General of the United States and current CEO of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. His new book is called Come Back America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. He'll be in town in Dallas Friday, January 29th, as a guest speaker for the National Center for Policy Analysis. Dave, welcome to Think.
Great to be with you, Chris.
You have drawn comparisons between the United States today and the decline of the Roman Empire. Can you talk about the parallels?
Well, first, we're overconfident and overextended around the world. We have political discord. We have declining societal values. We have the government has overpromised and is on the road to fiscal oblivion. And we can't control our own borders. If those sound familiar, we need to make sure that we wake up, learn from history, and take steps to make sure that it doesn't repeat itself.
How much is the federal government spending these days just on interest?
About 10% of the budget is for interest, but that's because we have low interest rates. We're adding debt at record rates, and interest rates will go up once the economy turns around. Even without an interest rate increase, within 12 years, the single largest line item in the federal budget is expected to be interest on the debt. More than defense, more than Social Security, more than Medicare, Medicaid. Yeah, and frankly, interest rates are going up.
Now, a lot of people are worried about our ongoing level of defense spending. One concern you have is that by design, military leaders request equipment and resources without any consideration of what they will cost.
Yeah, believe it or not, Washington uses a lot of words that don't mean the same thing as Webster's Dictionary. One example is trust funds. You can't trust them. They're not funded. Another example is requirements. The military is supposed to come up with requirements. And by law, whatever they deem to be requirements, which in many cases are frankly wants rather than needs, based on past threats rather than current and future ones, they're not supposed to consider the budget. So as a result, you know, they have a lot more things that they want to do that we can't afford and sustain.
And I guess the idea there is that they shouldn't be burdened by worrying about how it'll be paid for. They should worry about security, but that's not ultimately what happens.
No, it's not, because the problem is that we don't have a strategic, integrated, forward-looking, threat and risk-based approach to our planning process for the Pentagon. So as a result, we get a lot more things that we want to buy that are more wants rather than needs and that we can't afford and sustain. And ultimately, somebody's got to pay. And what ends up happening is that when you hit the wall and you realize that you don't have enough money, then you end up finding out that you funded a lot of things that you wanted but we didn't really need, and you may not have enough money left for the things you really need.
So what are the most practical ways of assessing which expenditures with regard to defense are necessary and which ones are wasteful?
Well, the first thing that we need to do is we need to have a comprehensive look at what are the current and future likely threats facing the United States and our national security. And it's not a force-on-force combat situation in Europe. It's not a force-on-force combat situation in Asia. We have more diffuse threats. Frankly, cybersecurity is one of the biggest threats that we face, and not from a military standpoint, but attacking our economy, attacking the banking system, which could cause havoc in this country. So we need to move away from Cold War mentalities. We need to also recognize that the all-volunteer force is very, very, very expensive. And quite frankly, I seriously question whether or not it's sustainable over time.
You suggest that we assess the real risk that service members face in their jobs and compensate them accordingly so that somebody in a combat position gets considerably more than someone working in a support capacity on a base in the United States itself. Can you talk about how that might affect morale?
Well, first, I think we have to understand that there are some differences already. There is such a thing as combat pay when you're in a war zone. It's not real significant. The biggest significant difference is that when you're working in a war zone, you don't have to pay income taxes, and that could be pretty significant. At the same point in time, the theory has been that if you wear the uniform, you represent the same, you have the same relative risk, because who knows if you might get called up and be put in harm's way, when in reality, that's not accurate. A fairly small percentage of the total force is actually put in harm's way. And so we need to recognize that we need to focus our compensation structure more on skills and knowledge and real threat and risk, while still making sure that we pay enough, if it's a volunteer force, that we can attract and retain the right kind of people.
Now, you're not necessarily suggesting that we reinstate a draft here, but you think some kind of compulsory national service might actually make sense.
I absolutely do. I think, you know, we've grown too disconnected from our societal responsibilities. I do not support a draft because you don't want people serving in uniform who don't want to do it. That's obviously not in the interest of our national security, and frankly, it represents a threat and risk to those who are wearing the uniform. At the same point in time, I think that we need to encourage everybody to do some service for their country, of which the military would be an option. But I think we should think about things that don't involve the government. I mean, for example, if somebody wants to be a nurse or be a teacher, whether or not that's for the government or not, those are areas that we need more skilled and knowledgeable people, and that they do provide a societal benefit.
So we've talked a lot about defense spending here, but on the other hand, the level of federal defense spending has fallen over the past several decades, so that today it's roughly half of what we're spending on Social Security and federal health care programs.
Well, it's about the same as Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the same as Medicare and Medicaid combined. It's about 20% of federal expenditures, but that's dramatically down from the late 60s, where it was about 43%. At the same time, you know, we spend about as much as all other countries combined on national defense. Now, in fairness, we're a lot more transparent about our expenditures than some other countries are. Plus, you know, our wage rates are a lot higher, so the dollar doesn't go as far. And frankly, we've assumed a disproportionate amount of the responsibility for global security. We need to do less, and others need to do more.
Let's talk for a minute about Social Security. First of all, can we afford to pay what we have promised? You know, we all get these periodic statements saying when you retire at this particular age, you can expect this much per month.
Not at the current level of taxation. Social Security is underfunded by $7.7 trillion. And that's a lot of money, but it's not that much when compared to Medicare's $38 trillion underfunding. You know, we're going to need to restructure Social Security to make it solvent, sustainable, secure, and more savings-oriented. People that are retired or close to retirement are going to have little to no changes to their promises. The younger you are, the better off you are financially, the more you're going to be affected. But we have an opportunity to reform this program in a way that every generation will get more than they think they're going to get. Not more than they've been promised, more than they think they're going to get. I call that a win. And we ought to put some points on the board.
This was the first year in a quarter century in which Social Security recipients didn't receive a cost of living adjustment. And, of course, we know the cost of living came down a bit. Should we have held off, though, in other years as well, or had smaller adjustments?
Well, one of the things that should be considered is whether or not the current cost of living adjustment factor for seniors accurately reflects their cost of living. Many people believe that it overstates it, in particular because, you know, a significant component of cost is health care, and seniors are, you know, have the benefit of the Medicare program, which obviously people under 65 don't have the benefit of. And so I think we need to take a look at whether or not the cost of living index is adequate and accurate, if it's a fair reflection. The other thing is that while there was no cost of living index, you know, increase this year, they did get a $250 one-time payment, which quite frankly was blatant political pandering.
How much income should be subject to Social Security tax?
Well, obviously you shouldn't pay tax on something that you paid for yourself with your own payroll deduction contributions. And I think that we need to, I would argue that individuals end up paying for all the Social Security taxes because they're part of your wages. And so I think I would question whether or not any of it should be subject to tax, because while half of it is paid for by the employer, I can assure you that affects how much your total compensation is. And so, in effect, the individual is paying for that as well, and you don't get a deduction for it.
And you would like to see benefits expanded, ultimately, for people who are close to the poverty line. Can you talk about how you would amend the structure of payments to
Sure.
Social Security recipients?
Well, first, you know, Social Security was intended to be a foundation of retirement security, not the entire system. You know, it was intended to be like a house, the foundation that you would have to build on in order to have a reasonable standard of living in retirement. Unfortunately, today, 22% of Americans rely upon Social Security as their sole source of retirement income, and over half of Americans rely on it as their primary source. So we need to provide a somewhat higher replacement level benefit for people who work 35 to 40 years and pay into the system than we do right now. We still need to provide a benefit to middle and upper income people, but maybe not quite as generous as it is right now. And that way you end up still maintaining a social insurance system. It's more progressive. It provides that solvent, sustainable, and secure safety net. But we need to encourage people to save more. And one way to do that is a supplemental automatic savings element on top that goes into a real trust fund with real investments, with real fiduciary responsibility and liabilities, whereas if the government plays with it, somebody goes to jail.
David M. Walker is my guest. He is former U.S. Controller General and current CEO of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. His new book is called Comeback America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. We'll resume our conversation with Dave in just a couple of minutes, and you can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. We need to take a couple of minutes out right now, though, to ask you to become a member of KERA by making a contribution. The telephone number there is 1-888-694-6931. As always, you can also make a contribution on KERA.org. Happens online, takes just a couple of minutes. Jeff Whittington is with me now, senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. It's a great conversation today, and I hope that everyone is enjoying it as much as we are. And thanks so much for tuning in. We're in the midst of this winter membership campaign, and we've been doing this a couple of days, and you know, we want to get back to the regular plan just as badly as you who listen every single day to the station. You want it to get back to the regular plan too, but you've waited perhaps to call 888-694-6931. Maybe you've waited to go online to KERA.org and make that e-gift. Well, there's a great opportunity right now to get your very own copy of David Walker's book, Comeback America.
It's available at the $120 contribution level. You just call 1-888-694-6931. Let the folks on the phone know that you want to make that gift, and they will set it up. You can also do this online at KERA.org. The book is really interesting, and it is, I think, very surprising in some ways, the simplicity with which all these problems are attacked. It's just a matter of getting it done. And maybe that's a parallel for becoming a member of KERA. It's very simple. You just have to make the decision to get it done.
1-888-694-6931. It's 888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org. Think about why you tune into KERA. Think about what you listen to on the station during the day. If you listen at work or if it's part of the soundtrack of your day-to-day activities, maybe it's worth $60. Maybe it's worth $120 for a whole year of programming that you have come to depend on to be here. So a couple of times a year, we tell you and we remind you that we depend on you as well, and the station depends on you to be able to bring you this programming. Please call 888-694-6931 and do your part right now.
We are asking everyone who listens to the station to make a contribution. You can make a big contribution. You can make a small contribution. You can make whatever seems right to you. But your contributions are what make it possible for us to provide this programming to you. Give us a call now at 1-888-694-6931, 1-888-694-6931, or make a contribution online at KERA.org. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with David M. Walker.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is former U.S. Controller General David M. Walker. He is currently CEO of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. His new book is called Come Back America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. He will be in Dallas next Friday, January 29th, at the Belo Mansion as a guest speaker for the National Center for Policy Analysis. If you'd like to be part of this discussion, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Dave, you have suggested that we bump up the premiums for wealthier Medicare recipients. How much makes sense, and how do you decide who falls into that wealthier category?
Well, nobody thinks they're wealthy unless they're, you know, millionaires or better, I guess, and it all depends to a certain extent on where you live, frankly. But here's the deal. What we need to recognize is that today, for Medicare's Supplemental Medical Insurance Program, Part B, which is outpatient physicians, and for Medicare prescription drugs, that on average, the premiums only pay for 25% of the cost, no matter what your income is. Now, there's some income-related premiums in Medicare Part B, but there's not enough. And so what we have to do is we have to recognize that if you're near poor, it's understandable to have a 75% taxpayer subsidy. But if you're well off, and that's going to have to be defined by elected officials, you know, you shouldn't receive as much of a subsidy. And if you're very well off, you shouldn't get any subsidy. Basically, there's a difference between universal opportunity to purchase voluntarily and how much the taxpayers subsidize the insurance, because after all, our kids and our grandkids are going to pay the bill with interest.
How did we get into a system where we are subsidizing even people who can afford their own care?
Because we have a lot of elected officials who like to promise people more than we can afford and sustain, and defer the tough decisions until down the road. Plus, human beings like to get something for nothing. We have a societal problem. We want big government spending and low government taxes. That can't be sustained forever. And sometimes elected officials let people believe that there's a free lunch. Frankly, some of that's going on right now with regard to health care reform. There is no free lunch. You can't reduce health care costs by expanding coverage. It's an oxymoron.
You have endorsed the idea of expanding Medicaid to at least a limited number of people at the lower income echelon. Can you talk about that?
Right. I mean, you know, we have to understand that the government does have a responsibility for those who are less well off, and those who are disabled, and those who are poor or near poor. And I think that, you know, one can make an argument that the eligibility for Medicaid could be expanded to cover more people who are near poor. I think that to the extent that we want to move towards universal coverage, which, by the way, I support some level of universal coverage, it needs to be more for preventative and wellness and catastrophic protection. In other words, people don't want to be wiped out financially during an unexpected catastrophic accident or illness. You know, the number one cause of bankruptcy in this country is health care costs. That shouldn't be. That we can afford and sustain, but providing very lucrative health care promises is something we can't afford and, frankly, we can't sustain.
You know, it's interesting, Dave, when you talk about catastrophic illnesses, because people can sort of conceive of that as some sort of long-term problem or a terrible accident. On the other hand, there are a lot of medical conditions that are not considered catastrophic but can cost tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars over a couple of years. One idea that you have for fixing the private health care system is eliminating fee-for-service care. Can you talk about how that creates incentives for better and more efficient care?
Well, I give an example in the book. I mean, you know, my wife had an accident and had about $20,000 worth of tests to try to figure out what happened. She actually fainted in the middle of the day while she was driving, probably a sugar issue or something. They never did find out. But they ran every test they could think of. Why? Because people got paid to do more. And secondly, you know, because they were less likely to get sued because they didn't, you know, because they did everything they could think of. Interestingly, I asked the physician, when I went in with my wife on the last battery of tests, I said, do you have any idea how much this is going to cost? He says, I have no idea, but don't worry about it. Your insurance company is going to pay for it. I said, doctor, you don't seem to understand how insurance works. They pay for it today. We pay for it tomorrow.
with increased premiums.
Correct.
Yeah. Talk for a minute about, let's talk about revenue. Clearly, we can't get to where we need to be simply by cutting expenses. So do we need to start thinking about new sources of taxation income?
Yes. The simple fact is nobody likes taxes. We want to keep taxes as low as possible in order to promote economic growth, keep as much money in the private sector as possible, and also allow people to have as much discretion over their resources as possible. On the other hand, we're way short of being able to pay our current bills and deliver our future promises. Taxes are going to go up. They're going to go up on a lot more people than those making $250,000 or more because the math doesn't come close to working. Frankly, we shouldn't send any more money to Washington without tough statutory budget controls and round one of social insurance reform and spending constraint. But in addition to a streamlined, simplified income tax, we need to think about some type of a progressive consumption tax, like a value-added tax. But that has to be coupled with tough statutory budget controls, because otherwise it could end up providing a huge pool of resources to government that would just continue, the tax would continue to go up and up.
So what we don't want is to write them a blank check.
No. And by the way, we're the only major industrialized nation in the world that writes a blank check for health care. Nobody else is dumb enough to do that.
So other countries, despite the fact that in many cases they have better outcomes, they do put a cap on the amount of money overall that they will spend.
Yeah, typically what they do is the federal government will end up deciding how much money they're going to allocate to health care. It has to compete with other parts of the budget like national defense and you know, education and transportation and infrastructure and things of that nature. And then what they do is they'll allocate those funds by geographic region. They'll reimburse physicians typically based, you know, or providers based upon evidence-based practice standards, or by saying, okay, we're going to give you so much per person to provide health services to this segment of the population. That totally changes the incentives. That means that people only want to do things that make sense, that will meaningfully improve or extend life, because if you end up spending on something, money on something that's wasteful, it's money you don't have to spend on something that's useful. It's kind of like the military and what's going on with weapon systems.
We allow doctors to make those choices without considering what they're going to cost.
Right, and the doctors should make those choices, not the government. On the other hand, they need to make those choices based upon national evidence-based practice standards, based upon the facts and circumstances of whether or not a particular procedure or drug or whatever is going to meaningfully improve or extend life, in consultation with other physicians, and recognizing that they don't have a blank check, that there's a limited amount of resources to be allocated.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. If you'd like to speak to David M. Walker about his book, Comeback America, you can also send email to think@kera.org. We have one here that asks what your opinions are on the political feasibility of gradually curtailing or eliminating the Social Security program and other federally funded entitlement programs. Will that ever happen?
No, I don't believe it will. I actually do believe that we need a foundation of retirement income security, and I think Social Security is intended to provide that. But again, as I said before, just as we need a foundation of health security, we need to be realistic about what's appropriate, affordable, and sustainable. Government has a tendency to promise more than it can deliver. And by the way, it's about ready to do that again in the healthcare area, or trying to do that again. So I don't think it's feasible, nor do I think it's desirable to get out of it altogether. But I think we have to restructure it as compared to what it is now.
We have an email here from Terry in Fort Worth who says, why can't the U.S. take the premiums, copays, deductibles, et cetera, already paid by employers and individuals, and apply that to a universal health care system much like other countries have, not in addition to taxes, but instead of them?
Well, first you have to understand that in general, the government hasn't proven to be the most efficient and effective way to get things done. If you look at Medicare and Medicaid, for example, yes, their administrative expenses are a lot less on average than the private sector, but I can assure you, having been an Auditor General of the United States for 10 years, they have way more waste, fraud, abuse, and mismanagement than you get in a private sector system. We need to recognize that we have to figure out what's the most efficient and effective ways to get things done. That means the government should be involved with regard to things that are that are in our broad-based societal interests that everybody have, but we need to provide other alternatives for things beyond that. We need to have competition. Government's not competition. Government's a monopoly.
Is that a problem, Dave, that's unique to the United States government, that inefficiency of the healthcare system? It does seem to work well, reasonably well, in Europe and in Canada and in other places.
Well, part of the reason is because they've done a lot of the things that I advocate in the book. And, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they do have a budget. They don't have fee-for-service systems. They do have evidence-based practice standards. And by the way, even countries that have so-called national health care, like the United Kingdom, they all also have a private sector system that ends up providing quicker services or supplemental services that otherwise wouldn't be available through the public health system. So it's not necessarily an all-or-nothing scenario, if you will.
Yeah, we had Matt Miller on the show yesterday, and he's talked about a sort of hybrid system where there was a certain level of government care, and then anything above and beyond or a certain level of guaranteed care is something that you'd have to pay for.
Well, I know Matt. I've known Matt for a long time, and we're friends. And intellectually, that's similar to some of the things that I'm saying. I'm saying what we need to do as a country is to say, look, what is it in our broad-based societal interest to make sure that we have universally within this country, given the fact that we are a wealthy industrialized nation? What's appropriate? What's affordable? What's sustainable? Let's take steps to ensure that that's there. Let's provide opportunities for people to get more than that than they want, and choices with competition, but you're going to have to come out of pocket for it. That totally changes the incentives, provides a lot more safeguards, a lot more checks and balances, and is likely to work. That's not what we have now. That's what we need to move to.
David M. Walker is my guest. He's former U.S. Controller General. His new book is called Come Back America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. We'll resume our conversation in just a couple of minutes and invite you to get on the line now to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We're going to pause for a couple of minutes now. Jeff Whittington is back in the room with me, and we want to encourage you to join KERA as a supporting member at whatever level works for you. The telephone number to make that call is 1-888-694-6931. We're also taking donations at our website, kera.org. Lots of folks to thank so far today. Thanks to John Wilson in Richardson and Juan Wen in Grand Prairie, Stephen Carrollton in Flower Mound, also Megan Carnero in Dallas, and Steve Maines in Farmers Branch. Wonderful.
Thanks so much to each of you. We'd love to see your contribution come in either on the phone at 1-888-694-6931, or make your safe and secure e-gift at kera.org. It's very easy. It takes about 2 minutes to fill out the membership form all on your own. And you can also look at the thank you gifts that are available. We have, for instance, your very own copy of Come Back America by David M. Walker. It's available at the $120 membership level. Of course, we're not selling you the book at the $120 membership level. You can go get it. It's in the bookstores. And if you are so inclined after hearing this conversation, which I think is a great talk, and it fits right in with the kind of conversations that we like to bring you every day on Think, go right ahead. But please do support the radio station that let you know about the book, and that is KERA. We hear from people all the time who say, I wouldn't know what to read without KERA and without public radio. And, you know, I think that what we really try to do on the Think Show, and I think in the larger context in public radio in general, is bring you a broad diversity of people and their opinions. And if you get something out of that, then please support it. The number is 888-694-6931.
Think about a contribution to KERA really as an investment in your own intellectual growth and awareness and development, and also in that of your community. You know, if you really benefit from public radio and are glad that it's here for you, imagine what it does for other people that are just discovering the service for the first time. You can make it happen and make sure that it continues when you call 1-888-694-6931. If you think that public radio should exist in your community, be part of the private sector that really supports it and makes it possible.
Yeah, it is up to you. It is your public radio station. And there are public radio stations all over the country. And if you've lived in another community, that was your public radio station. But this is yours. And we're asking you to support your station with a quick call to 888-694-6931 or a pledge online, safe and secure. It's very easy to do online at kera.org. Whether you've never joined before, the door's open for new members right now. If it's time for you to renew your membership, Maybe you were a member several years ago. Maybe you still got that member card and you can pull it out and look and see when your membership expired. Well, come on back. It's totally, all is forgiven. You know, you can get right back in the fold and do your part to help ensure that KERA stays strong and is able to continue to bring you the programming that you listen to. That's what it's all about. You listen. We ask you to help pay for it at 888-694-6931.
We are asking everyone who listens to KERA on a regular basis to make a contribution. So if you tune in, you know, several days a week, whether it's to this show or to Morning Edition or All Things Considered, or you tune in on Fridays to hear Jeff's show, anything you ever wanted to know, you are a regular listener. We are speaking to you. Please don't think, oh, I hope all those other people give some money to KERA. Believe me, if everybody did that, we would be out of business. Thankfully, there are those of you who recognize the importance of this, and frankly, who choose to use their money to support something that they think is important. It's a value in your life. It's a value to your community. And it really does sort of express your values in terms of really taking care of the things that mean a lot to you. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can choose to receive a copy of David M. Walker's book, Come Back America, if you make a $120 contribution.
It's, you know, Chris, it's kind of like a neighborhood. If everybody goes home, goes right inside the house, locks the door, and never talks to their neighbors, and never pays attention to what's going on the street, the neighborhood has a tendency to you know, maybe to feel not so welcoming, and maybe even to decline somewhat. But when everyone steps out on the porch, says hello to everybody, and everybody looks out for each other, you know, that neighborhood can really flourish. And what we're asking you to do is come on out, you know, step out on the porch, pick up the phone, call 888-694-6931. Take an active role in your public radio neighborhood, your public radio community here in North Texas, if you will, or go online to KERA.org and contribute something to help ensure that this station and this community will flourish.
And if nothing else, you know, sweep your own front porch. If you listen, send a few dollars along to cover the cost of your listening to the station. That's all we're asking you to do. You can do it online at KERA.org, either with a credit or debit card, or you can arrange to send a check if that's the way you still like to do things. You can also give us a call at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks to Carmen Busby in Dallas, Barry Goldblatt in Plano, Patrick Rogers in Dallas, and you, if you're calling now, 888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is David M. Walker, former U.S. Comptroller General and current CEO of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. His new book is called Come Back America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. Our number is 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Danielle in Leander. Hi, Danielle.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Okay. Yeah, I was listening to the conversation earlier and what you were saying about providing a basic level of care, and anything above and beyond that would be something that could be, you know, competition for in the private market. I was wondering specifically how that breaks down. What's considered basic level of care and what's considered extras?
Well, in my view, Danielle, the two things that I hear when talking to Americans around the country, and as I said, I've been to 46 states in the last several years, that they need is they need protection against financial ruin due to unexpected catastrophic accident or illness. It could come at any time, at any wage, for a number of reasons. And as I said, the number one cause of bankruptcy today is health care cost. But in addition, as a society, we also need to encourage people to assume more personal responsibility for their health and wellness, and we need to provide more preventative and wellness services in order to help them do so, which will not only benefit them, but it'll benefit our society and hopefully reduce, you know, certain types of invasive procedures in the future. So I think those are the two bookends. The bookends are preventative and wellness and protection against catastrophic accidents or illnesses, and obviously that varies to a certain extent depending upon your means. And the government's always going to do more for those that are disabled and for those that are indigent. That's understandable. But for broad cross sections of society, those are the two pillars.
We have an email here from Harold, who reminds us he has just renewed his membership. Thank you, Harold. With the deficit being such a problem, he writes, why are major corporations allowed to hide their profits in tax shelters like the Cayman Islands?
Well, you know, we do need to take a look at our tax laws, and we do need to look at what the rules are with regard to, transfer payments and with regard to offshore tax havens, if you will. There is some abuse that goes on there, but we also must keep in mind one thing. While most Americans, as individuals, have a duty of loyalty to this country, and most Americans don't want to move to another country, corporations will. And so while we need to crack down on tax abuse, and there is some tax abuse by corporations, we also have to make sure that our overall corporate tax system is competitive with other major countries around the world, because if it's not, they will move. And in fact, one of the concerns that I have is, you know, a lot of people focus on how many jobs are in the United States that move overseas. That's not the big problem. The big problem is how many jobs are created overseas that could have been created here but weren't created here that you never see.
So how do we encourage our global competitors to practice things like fair labor standards and sustainable production models?
Well, you have to do it through global agreements. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to do it through agreements, you know, whether it's trade agreements and or other global agreements like World Trade or whatever else, that do their best to provide a more level playing field and that have enforceable provisions. You know, there's free trade and there's fair trade, and they're not necessarily the same thing. Unfortunately, when you're the world's largest debtor nation rather than the world's largest creditor nation, which we used to be, you know, we don't have the same kind of leverage that we used to have. You know, 50% of our nation's public debt is held by foreign lenders. They're the ones that are going to be dictating what we're going to do other than the other way around if we don't get our financial house in order.
You have a simple but seemingly revolutionary idea here for reforming campaign finance, and that is that we need to ensure that more than half of congressional campaign contributions come from individuals who are eligible to vote for the candidate to whom they are donated. And if people take just a moment to think about that, that's strikingly different from the way it works now. Can you talk about it for a minute?
Yeah, I'm basically suggesting that, you know, we need redistricting reform, campaign finance reform, and also term limits. And on campaign finance, the simple principle is that the only people who can vote for you are people who are constituents in your congressional district or in your state at the federal level. And therefore, we should require, and this would take a constitutional amendment, we should require that a significant majority of your contributions for office come from people who can actually vote for you. They don't have to vote for you, but they have the potential to vote for you. And that also includes people who have their own money. I suggested in the book, for example, 80%, which would mean you could still get money from other people and other entities, but it would be limited. And I think that would end up dramatically changing in the nature of our political system.
It sounds like there would be less money flowing in overall because the incentive would disappear for people to give money based on strictly financial causes.
Right. I got to tell you, you know, today the Supreme Court handed down a decision that basically allows corporations and unions to make direct political contributions to candidates. I think as a result of the Supreme Court decision that was made today, we need a constitutional amendment. We need a constitutional amendment with regard to several things, including campaign finance.
Another idea you have, and you alluded to this briefly earlier, is very strict campaign, or rather term limits on members of Congress. How would that change the game?
Well, first, we have something now that the founding fathers never intended. They intended for people to have real jobs in the real world, to leave those real jobs in the real world for a short or medium period of time, to do public service, and then to return to their real jobs in the real world. Today, we have a significant majority of public officials at the federal level who are career politicians. They have little or no experience in the real world. They go to the la-la land of the East, Washington, D.C. They want to stay there for their entire career, and if they leave, they become a lobbyist or something else that has to do with government. that creates a disconnect between those who are responsible for making decisions and those who are affected by those decisions. That is not conducive towards making tough choices. That is not conducive towards innovation. And at the same time, the term limits that we need to think about at the federal level need to be longer than what many of the states do, because many of the states have such short term limits, it turns out to be counterproductive.
You were known during your tenure at the General Accountability Office for being a guy who was unafraid to say out loud and broadcast what you thought was going wrong. Now, some of those you were able to change, and some didn't change. I'm wondering, though, if you find that now it's actually easier for you to raise awareness about our fiscal imbalance now that you've left the GAO.
Well, frankly, nobody can accuse me of not stating the facts and speaking the truth when I was in office because I did it loud and louder, frankly, as time went on. But what I can do now that I couldn't do then, and which is what things that are in the book, is I couldn't have published a book as Comptroller General of the United States. I definitely could not have included specific policy reforms, operational reforms, and I couldn't have touched political reforms with a 100-foot pole. And so, in effect, while I accomplished everything that I laid out for myself, you know, as far as transforming GAO and the accountability profession while I was there, the one thing that I couldn't finish was to help deal with the issues that are addressed in this book. And frankly, I'm in a better position to address that being president and CEO of the Peterson Foundation than I was as Comptroller General of the United States.
David M. Walker's new book is called Comeback America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. He will be in Dallas next Friday, that's January 29th, at the Belo Mansion as a guest speaker for the National Center for Policy Analysis. Dave, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
My pleasure. Look forward to getting back to Texas.
Have fun when you come.
All right. Bye-bye.
My name is Chris Boyd. We appreciate all of you who have called this hour and become members of KERA. Perhaps some of you wanted to wait till the end of that conversation and are headed to the phones right now. I'll remind you of the telephone number. It is 1-888-694-6931. Online contributions, of course, also count. You can make those by going to kera.org. Hello, Jeff Whittington.
Hey, Chris Boyd, and hello to you. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We have had a great conversation with Dave Walker. We've got the super movie star, Robert Duvall, coming up shortly, and he's such a great interview, and he's such a nice guy, and we're so excited to have him. So please, don't wait. Call right now, 888-694-6931. Go online to kera.org because it's going to be one of those guests that you're not going to want to pledge. You're going to want to listen.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret here. My husband today gave me permission to take a tango dancing lesson from Robert Duvall, if one is offered. So it might be an interesting hour.
888-694-6931 is the number to call. Online, kera.org. Thanks very much to Doug Mays and Whitney, Frank Flink in Laguna Park. Also, we heard from, let's see, who is that? Valerie Borgefield in Denton. Thank you so much for all of your contributions this week. Of course, the sooner you call, 888-694-6931, the sooner you go online to KERA.org and do your part, the sooner we can wrap this drive up and get right back to the regular schedule.
It'd be great to have a friend contribution during this hour. And, of course, you're all our friends if you listen to the show and particularly if you contribute to the station. But the Friends membership at KERA is a $1,500 a year commitment, and you make it a year at a time. And we can separate that out for you in a sustaining membership, so it's just $125 drawn from your bank account each month. And there are some special privileges that come along with that. When you make the phone call to 1-888-694-6931, you can find out about some of those benefits, or you can check them out online at kera.org. If it's something that would work within your budget and reflects your values, then please consider it.
888-694-6931 is the number. You can use a credit or debit card to make your contribution. That's what most people do because it's just quick and easy and convenient. You can also set up a sustaining membership, which a lot of KERA supporters do. That's where you set it up so that there's an affordable monthly transfer from your account to KERA's account. And it just happens automatically, and you don't have to worry about it. And you know that you are part of the monthly foundation of financial support for the station. And we have about 7,000 plus, actually over 7,000 KERA members are on the sustaining member program. So it is a significant group of people that support your public radio station. I just ask, are you supporting your public radio station? And if you're not, it's time to get on board. Please call now, 888-694-6931, or go online and make an e-gift. It's safe and secure. It's easy to do. You can do your e-gift at KERA.org.
Among the thank you gifts we have available today, if you are so inclined, is a copy of Come Back America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. That's the book you heard us just discussing with David M. Walker. It really was interesting, Jeff, I thought, to hear him say, in his time as Comptroller General, he was very outspoken, but there are still things contained in this book that he couldn't say when he was serving in an official capacity for the U.S. government. There's a lot to be found in the book. We'd encourage you to read it regardless, but if you want to support KERA and want to choose this as your gift, we'd love to be able to send it to you.
Yeah, it's yours with our thanks when you join the station at the $120 membership level. We've heard from a few of you. We're still waiting to hear from you. The number's 888-694-6931. You can go online to KERA.org as well.
Thanks to Ramsey Mansour in Keller and Stephen Wetzel in Rockwall, Elizabeth Winter in Arlington for your contributions. Thanks also to Edgar Smith in Rockwall and Ken Alvarado in Fort Worth.
We'd like to thank you, but we can't, we can't really have that relationship with you. We can't really, make you part of the team unless you get involved. Call us, 888-694-6931. Join at KERA.org. Whatever level is right for you. It's just important that you get involved, because the sooner you get involved, the sooner we get to a certain place with our goal, maybe more people will be motivated to join. And then pretty soon, before you know it, the drive is over and we're back to the regular schedule, which is something we all want to do. Our overall goal for this drive is $600,000, and we've made some progress on that goal. But really, our main goal is your participation. If you have never joined the station, this is a perfect time for you to get on board with KERA. If it's time for you to renew your membership, then consider this a friendly reminder that we've been waiting to hear from you.
This is, after all, your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, online at KERA.org, 100.1 K261 CW in Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR in Wichita Falls, and 99.3 K257 EV in Sherman. Again, I'm reading it. I need to get a copy of this that's not backwards and through some glass and 8 feet away.
She's reading backwards again.
That's my special trick for
the day.
Well,
and everyone always says, how does Chris read all those books? Well, she reads them backwards.
Backwards and upside down and through
the
glass.
It's real fast, as you just heard. It goes really, really well. 1-888-694-6931 is the phone number to pledge Control Central. And we got a couple minutes left here, and then we're going to have Robert Duvall. So please don't wait. Please call right now, because you're not going to want to tear yourself away, and you won't miss a minute of the conversation, because even when we have those membership breaks in the next hour, they won't intrude on the conversation. We're going to have a great, long conversation with Academy Award winner Robert Duvall shortly, but we'd like for you to support it. 888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
You know, we're very lucky to be able to bring in guests of this caliber, and frankly, of the caliber of David M. Walker.
Oh, yeah.
It's in part because people who program these things know that KERA is sort of a flagship station. If you've lived in other parts of the country, perhaps some smaller markets, you may be able to tell the difference. It's because we have resources here in North Texas, thanks to you, to put on local programming and to have guests of national and international renown. That's thanks to you. Frankly, this could be just a sort of a pass-through, but the commitment has been made here to program the station locally to make sure that it really reflects North Texas. We can do that because you send contributions to 1-888-694-6931.
Yeah, your public radio station and this Think program, your public radio show, just coming down the highway in a couple of weeks. I'm working on a writer, Scott Anderson. He's a war correspondent and contributor to National Geographic, who's written about something that's not war for next week, which is really, he's a great writer. We've got Christine Todd Whitman, former New Jersey governor, that we're working on getting. And I normally don't talk about this kind of stuff.
I know, letting the cat out of the bag.
I've got writer Tobias Wolf, famous writer, coming in studio in mid-February when he's here in town. We're able to get these people because your public radio station, KERA, has a reputation for fairness, and the show has a reputation for fairness, and people of all political persuasions and people of all different religious backgrounds and social backgrounds and people from all over the world listen to the station, but they also want to be part of the conversation. And your support is what allows KERA and to a large degree, public radio, to be independent and to be able to go get someone like David Walker or someone like Matt Miller yesterday, who may have different differences of opinion, but can still be on the same show and still bring a great conversation to you anytime you turn the radio on.
We will be back in just a few minutes with Robert Duvall, Academy Award winner. Right now, though, we ask that you take a few seconds to make a contribution at 1-888-694-6931 or go online and do it there. The address is kera.org. Thank you very much for your support because it really does make a difference.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.